You are listening to Tech Talk, guys.
Welcome to episode 9 of Tech Talk, guys. Welcome back, Joe.
Hey, good to hear you again, Bill, on the podcast.
It's been a little while.
It has been.
Our last podcast was June 25th, 2010.
Yeah, I even noticed that in our chat on Skype, that was the last time I had a chat conversation on Skype with you.
That's been a while, definitely. Well, let's do a quick recap of what's happened in almost 2 years. What's new with you, Joe?
Well, I've definitely been enjoying some new roles with my position. I've been traveling a lot more. I'll actually be headed to Santa Barbara and San Diego at the end of June here, so that should be fun. So a lot more national travel.
That's good. Yeah, for me, work has continued to accelerate since the last time I talked on the podcast. Really loving my job.
I know you seem to be buzzing around a lot more too now with your role between different data centers and things.
A little bit more. So one of the main reasons I wanted to talk with you on the podcast is I have recently upgraded an HP touchpad to use Google Android version 4, otherwise known as Ice Cream Sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, after being a fanboy in the Mac camp for a long time using the iPad 1, and I've recently gotten an iPad 3, I was very impressed with Ice Cream Sandwich.
Yeah, and you're not the first Apple fanboy to kind of, not so much switch camps, but at least appreciate what Ice Cream Sandwich has brought to the table. I have another friend who, very similar to you in his love of iOS, but on a whim, he decided to give Ice Cream Sandwich a try. I told him a few different hardware devices to get. He actually got a Dell Streak 7, very similar to the one that I carry, as well as a Samsung Galaxy MP3 player, of all things, and rooted both of them, got them both on Ice Cream Sandwich. And then the next thing I knew, he was buying a Samsung Galaxy Note as well as a Samsung Galaxy Nexus, and had then switched over and gotten rid of his iPhone and switched to using those devices instead. It's pretty amazing how quickly he switched chips.
Wow. Well, you know, in my experience, I've enjoyed getting to know Android. I tried my first Android tablet about a year and a half ago, and it was running 2.2 of the Android software. I think it's called Froyo.
Yep.
It was an underpowered 7-inch tablet, and I was not impressed at all.
Right.
Now, if you remember back in recent history, HP released the HP TouchPad. It was a pretty decent tablet from a hardware spec standpoint. It's a 10-inch screen, just like the iPad. This version has a dual-core 1.2 gigahertz processor, so they were really kind of setting it up to compete head-to-head with the iPad 2 at the time. It has 32 gigs of storage on board and a front-facing camera. So it's pretty decent specs for a device of its cost. And what I mean by its cost, those of you who remember what happened, HP released the touchpad, and after 49 days, they decided to cancel the program.
Right.
So they drastically dropped the price from $599 down to $149 for a 32-gig tablet. So I remember at the time thinking somebody is going to find a way to port Android onto this device. So I'm going to go ahead and get one. And when I got it, I played around with the WebOS, and it was good. I mean, it was a decent OS. The only problem with it is that you got the feeling that you were walking around in a beautiful city that was going to keep decaying because nobody was going to come along and upkeep the city, aka no new apps, no right. Further development. One of my coworkers bought the HP TouchPad at the same time, and he is much more adventurous with Android. He's been keeping track of the development on the Android port for the TouchPad, and he told me a couple days ago, hey, it seems to be pretty solid. I'm running it now and not having any issues. So I decided to take the plunge last weekend, and I've been using it now for about a week, and I'm really enjoying it.
It's definitely a interesting thing that WebOS, the developer and the design, not I wouldn't say the developer and designer, but one of the lead guys, Matias Duarte, left WebOS and joined the Android side of Google around the time that you were just getting on with Froyo and Gingerbread was in the works. Then honeycomb and ice cream sandwich developed, and I think I can see the fingerprints of some of the WebOS functionality in ice cream sandwich. So some of the aesthetic usability of WebOS, which though it was a failure in that sense, it was a very beautiful platform, has now kind of merged into ice cream sandwich, and you've appreciated that as far as seeing the two. So hopefully it's not as much of a decaying city anymore.
Well, in the sense that now I'm not even going to use WebOS.
Right.
It's gone. It's gone and pretty much never to return. I was worried a bit about the stability of running community-based code.
Right.
But what mod system do you use for your devices?
So actually, across all of my Android devices, my phone, my wife's phone, and both of our Android tablets, we all run Cyanogen Mod 9, which Cyanogen is a pretty predominant developer. It's got a pretty large community behind it, and it's pretty close to the Android open source project as far as not having a lot of extra bells and whistles or UI functionality. So it's very close to vanilla, though it has a few little tweaks to improve performance and a few other things. But that's across the board. Cyanogen Mod 9 is kind of my go-to Android platform. And even though it is in alpha for some of my devices, it's not even in beta, it still runs better than what any of the carriers actually produce. Like, for example, Sprint still hasn't given me a good solid Android 4.0 experience on my Samsung Galaxy S2. And the Alpha 3 version of Cyanogen Mod is just crushing it on this phone. Runs fast, has access to my 4G WiMAX modems and everything. And so it's been great for me.
Well, that's the mod version I'm running right now, too. And it seems to be pretty good. I'm actually running what they call the nightly experimental builds.
Oh, yeah.
And so far, so good.
Now, in that, that was a Wi-Fi only one, correct? So you don't have like a 3G radio in that.
Correct.
HP touch. Okay.
Right. It's Wi-Fi only. Now, I will say a couple of things. The first incarnations of Android that I've seen, either on phones in version 1 or version 2, in my opinion, left a lot to be desired. The interfaces were not as clean as the Apple interfaces. The software really had some buggy issues. And then later on, you heard a lot about malware on the Android platform because Google does not gatekeep their app store the way that Apple and now Amazon does for the Kindle app store.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a real issue that Google needed to address. And apparently they are beginning to do some checks behind the scenes to look for malware apps in their store.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a wild west. It's kind of one of the downsides of being the quote unquote open. I won't say it's 100% open, but being the open platform let almost anybody develop an app and very simply put it up on the market, and people were downloading it and other people were maliciously exploiting little holes in the OS to get access to phones and contact information and things. But they definitely also did not do enough with the UI of the core Android OS. So I know for me early on with Froyo and even Gingerbread, even though I was running a very vanilla version of Android, I was tending to run something like Go Launcher or ADW, which were all apps that laid over top of the Android core to give me more of a graphically pleasing UI. Whereas with iOS, of course, there's no changing to the platform, but it was very simple and beautiful in its own right. Well, now with Ice Cream Sandwich, I'm just running just the Ice Cream Sandwich launcher that comes on it because it really does everything I need to. And so I can totally see where initially with the Froyo and the Gingerbread, it just was not that nice to look at. I mean, even the mechanism of creating folders or dropping widgets and all seemed to be a bit cumbersome. And now it's gotten much more fluid as far as the way you drop your apps versus the way you drop your widgets on your home screen and how you can organize things on your home screen itself.
Joe, did you get a chance to read the Isaacson biography on Steve Jobs?
Unfortunately, I got started into it, but I had a couple other reading I was doing for my company. So I haven't finished the entire thing, but I've gotten a good chunk in there. So,
Yeah, I'm in the same camp with you. I haven't finished it yet. I started it. There's an interesting part of that biography that may explain why Android is taking the turn that it's turning. Now, before I get accused of being an Apple fanboy, this was a comment in the biography about a conversation that Steve Jobs had with Larry Page when Larry Page took over in January 2011 from Eric Schmidt. Page actually called Steve Jobs for some pointers. And one of the things that Steve Jobs told Larry Page is you need to stress focus on your product lines. Figure out what Google wants to be when it grows up. It's now all over the map. What are the five products you want to focus on? Get rid of the rest because they're dragging you down. They're turning you into Microsoft. They're causing you to turn out adequate products that are adequate but not great. And I wonder if some of the change we've seen in the Android platform over the last period of time has come from that admonition from Jobs to really focus and make a great product.
I could definitely see that. Being a Google fan overall, leave alone Android. Android's just one part of my love of Google. Being on Gmail and G Plus and everything else, I could definitely see where earlier on, Google was definitely scramble-minded because we had things like Google Wave, which was, of course, just recently sunsetted officially. And then Google Docs, which now has just merged into Google Drive. And so it always seemed like the Google Lab boys were coming out with something else new, and would have a lot of drive and push behind it, but never enough focus. And especially in the mobile platform market, now that it's become such a cash cow for Google and for Apple especially, they realized that they needed to tighten their game up and really build in deeper integration. And I've been pleased to see how they've trimmed off a little bit of the fat so that they do get a better product that's not just adequate.
You know, one thing that's dawned on me as I've begun to use the Android tablet is the techniques that we use as humans to interact with these devices is pretty similar between the iPad and the Android tablet. Have you noticed that?
In this sense of swiping and folders?
Yeah, gestures and things you do. Now, definitely Android feels a little more like Windows in that you get options to do more things, but all in all, the interface, being able to use the device on a daily basis, it's pretty intuitive, and it seems to be across the tablet infrastructure now. So I can go from an iPad over to an ice cream sandwich tablet, and I really don't have to relearn. It's almost as if there's not as much distinction between the tablet platforms as there is distinction between going from Windows to Mac.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think somewhat hiding the file system structure seems to be the trend now. You know, even with a desktop platform with Lion, you don't really seem to do as much file management or location management of stuff with your tablets. It's just there somewhere on there, and you don't really worry about it because the applications find it for you. So, for example, with my phone, both iPhone and Android, you know, I'm taking pictures, but I don't really know where they're going. I mean, I know, but I don't really care where they're going. They're just kind of going and filling in places. And my apps, whether it's the gallery app, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, Google+, any of those things, they automatically just dig in and find those things and bring them up for me when I want to share it. So, yeah, both on iOS and Android, that file management piece is definitely something that I see as kind of a differentiator between desktop OSs and these tablets, but it seems to be the same common thread on the tablets where you don't do anything. The device does everything for you.
Joe, do you remember the one laptop per child project set forth by Nicholas Negroponte from MIT?
Yeah. Yes, I do. Yeah, he's originally from MIT, and he's done several TED Talks and things like that.
Have you been keeping up with the project? I know I had not.
I have not either, actually, other than probably Googling it right now in a second.
Well, this month's edition of Wired Magazine, they have a section in there called Screen Time. And what they have done is they've given 20, looks like from the picture, Android tablets, Motorola Android tablets, to children in this town, this village in Ethiopia. And they gave it to kids where there's no electricity and almost zero literacy. And with no instructions, the kids aged 4 through 12 began using the devices. It took the first kid 15 minutes to figure out how to power on the tablet. But within 3 minutes, all of the other 20 tablets were fired up and turned on. So the kids are actually teaching each other how to use the device.
Very interesting.
And so it's really an experiment to find out what can happen if you drop tablets into an area where you have no teacher, basically. Can the tablets with the proper applications help teach kids to become literate? And they've said they have tracking cards in the tablets, and they're recording what the kids are doing with the tablets to find out what apps they're using. Apparently, some of the apps that were in there, after the first week, new learners were using 47 of the apps. 2 weeks later, they were reciting the alphabet out loud. So very interesting, and that project will be going on, and they'll be reporting on the success. So what a way to bring literacy and technology to the world.
No, absolutely. This is something that even in a first world country like America, I've been seeing the trend in education now is doing kind of what's called the flipped classroom, where you're not leading from the front anymore, and you really are letting there be more of a free-form, project-based learning between students and collaboration, and the teachers more of just giving their input and even doing, to some degree, their lessons in a format where the students can access it at any time, so they don't even really have to be at school. Not to say that they shouldn't attend, but that they could get the same instruction at home as well by recording the teacher's lessons and then vodcasting it so that the kids could get it even when they're home for reinforcement. And there again, expanding the learning experience and giving it to the kids whenever they want it, sort of on demand instead of, you know, streaming, like they have to take it in when they're supposed to take it in.
Did you see that statistic recently? There was something like the number of households in America with kids that have iPads is above 50% now.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I could definitely see that. I was doing a, I won't say the product because at the time it's, and I believe it still is under NDA, but I was doing a product demonstration with an early product that my company's developing with some students, and they all described the product, and this is going to kind of give it away a little bit, but they described the product as the next generation iPad, but bigger. And so I thought it was funny how they even drew comparisons to our new product to the iPad. And these were second through fourth graders, so even early on. And I would say at least 2 to 3 kids in every single one of those classes that I worked with had their own iPad.
It is amazing. I mean, my daughter, who's now 4.5, takes to the iPad. I mean, she's been using an iPhone since she was 1.5 years old. She picked up the iPad and kept running with it. I mean, she's actually purchased her own apps, much to the dismay of my wife and I. She is a digital native. She gets it. She understands it. Tonight at dinner, we were out at a restaurant, and she said, "Daddy, can I play Angry Birds?" I mean, this is a 4.5-year-old.
Yeah, no, I've seen Olivia use the iPad, and she even was streaming using Apple TV the other night when I was down there a month ago or so, and brought up her show on the TV. She knew what she was doing.
Well, what's really interesting is when you're in the car and she calls out, "Hey, I'd like to hear the song," and you say, "I don't have it on my phone," and she says, "Well, you can go to YouTube and listen to it."
Yeah. That even happened to me tonight. You know, there's a local illusionist here in Baltimore named Spencer Horsman, his claim to fame is he's the youngest escape artist, professional escape artist. And my cousin called me and told me it was on TV. Well, what did I do? I actually went to YouTube, just turned in to America's Got Talent, Spencer Horsman, and sure enough, someone has already posted a YouTube video clip of him on the show. It's kind of interesting to see a local Baltimore native on America's Got Talent doing his gig, and I'm happy to say he did actually proceed to the next round.
Oh, that's good. I think the guy from Colonial Heights got booed off the stage a couple of nights
ago. Yeah, I saw that little Aussie, poor guy.
So, what else do we want to cover?
Well, our favorite Android apps, since we've talked a lot about Android, and, you know, you were mentioning, you know, and we've mentioned before how much we love Flipboard as kind of a consumption platform, and Android is left in the dark for a little bit there, and some of that disparity between the iOS platform and Android platform is shrinking, thankfully, as developers are realizing the size of the Android community user base. I know the big one that made a splash recently was Instagram, because Instagram was kind of the in thing for modifying a photo with some simple filters and then posting it to a wide range of social media channels, either Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, even just Foursquare. And now, of course, they've been recently acquired by Facebook. But it came to the Android platform, and it immediately blew up, and it was soon after that that Facebook acquired it. It was almost as if Facebook was just waiting for it to be a more ubiquitous platform before it snatched it right up. And so that's a good thing, but there's still some apps that are kind of left on just iOS, and one of them is Flipboard. I really do enjoy Flipboard for reading through my blogs and Twitter feeds and things like that. Facebook even is more appealing to me, I think, on Flipboard instead of on the Facebook app or anything. But we still don't have that same sort of platform. The closest that I know of is Google Currents. Have you tried that at all on your Android tablet?
Yes, I first had it on the iPad, and now I'm using it on the Android tablet.
Yeah, that's kind of the closest I can get to Flipboard on my Android. But I actually enjoy it. It's pretty good. I also love that it throws in some of my Google Plus circle tech luminary folks that I follow on Google Plus as people that I can read up on Google Currents. So I really enjoy that, because that's Google again tying some more integration between their social media platform Google Plus with their other product.
Yeah, it's a good product. It's polished. It feels nice. It's just as clean, I think, as Flipboard was when it first came out.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I wish Google Current could update a little bit better would be the ability to then share out the articles in a more cross-platform way. But that's just me being picky, because I like to be picky.
Well, there is one app that I mentioned on our last podcast. It was called Air Video. It's a program that you can load a server on one of your machines in your house and stream video files to your iPhone or iPad. And I was looking for Air Video on the Android, and it's an iOS only product, but there is an app called Mirage on the Android platform that will talk to an Air Video server. So I can watch the videos on the Android tablet just as easily as I can watch them on the iPad now. That was one good find for me.
Yeah, no, Air Video is definitely a wonderful platform, and I'm happy to hear about Mirage, because that's another good one. The ability to then take that Air Video and set it to a static or a dynamic DNS, and then have it kind of broadcasting out on the web is one thing that I actually allow my brother and even you, Bill, to then kind of remotely drive tunnel into my server so you can stream some of my videos to you. I actually did not know about Mirage, so you can guess the first thing I'm doing right now is actually downloading it on my Android tablet.
Well, it's a good app. I will say it's nice to have the iPad waiting in the wings when I'm working with the Android tablet. One of the things that you kind of fear when you're working on a tablet and trying experimental builds and things is, oh no, what happens if I crash it beyond repair? Am I going to be left stranded without a tablet? I will say I've been experimenting with the nightly builds from CyanogenMod. They're working. Everything's working well. I've really found a whole stack of apps that are the same apps I run on the iPad, and the functionality is perfectly equivalent. One thing I think the Android platform does a little better is podcasting apps. Which apps do you use, Joe?
For listening to podcasts?
Listening, yep.
I actually kind of just use a little bit of the Google Listen app, and that's it. Again, that's my Google side showing. I just stream from it.
I downloaded a program called BeyondPod, which I'm running the free version right now. There's like $6.99 for the paid version. And I will say, downloading that app and then searching for our podcast, I was just curious to see if it still existed out there, and it did. Downloaded it, played it, no problem whatsoever. It kind of got me inspired to give you a call and say, hey, why don't we record this episode we're doing now?
I was wondering where the inspiration came from.
So, well, I think we've gotten to the end of another great conversation.
I agree.
Anything else you'd like to add to this talk?
No, I think we just have to do a little bit better job about not spacing them out. If it keeps going in this exponential pattern, it might be 5 years before the next podcast.
Yep. Well, maybe we could have this podcast sponsored by Cocoon. So tell me something cool about Cocoon.
Well, considering how much I travel and my plethora of devices, because I am not exaggerating, when I travel, I carry one iPhone 4S, a Samsung Galaxy S2, a Dell Streak 7, an iPad 1, two iPod Touches, a MacBook Air, and from time to time, a Dell Latitude something or other. I have a lot of cables because I end up inevitably needing to charge all of these devices. And in my bag, it tends to turn into just a spaghetti mess of wiring, kind of that rat's nest thing. And you're just sitting there pulling one end of the cable and shaking a big ball and hopefully it'll come out. Well, over Christmas, I found a wonderful product from a company called Cocoon. It is the Gridit, and it is a... It's just so simple. It's one of those ones where you just kind of like, I should have thought of that. And it's basically kind of a cardboard surface, but it's wrapped in like a ripstop nylon kind of exterior. And then webbed across one side are a bunch of elastic straps that are kind of woven together in kind of a visually appealing pattern. But they also have a little bit of a kind of a grippy rubberized dot all over it, and you can just pull up different sections of the webbing to tuck in cables, wires, chargers, and things like that. There's also a zippered pouch in the back for carrying other things. And so what you end up with is, and I wish I could show it, but I'm sure we can post a picture, is you end up with this one slab that you can just pull out of your bag that will neatly have all of your cables kind of tucked and organized away, so you just pull out what you need and slide it right back in your bag and pull it right back out. It works out really well, especially with TSA security. Sometimes they're a little bit concerned as to why I'm carrying as much wiring as I'm carrying, and I can just simply pull this out and lay it down next to my bag and they can kind of clearly see everything. So Cocoon and the Gridit, that comes in a couple different colors. I just went with black, but I've definitely enjoyed it.
The same thing. I've traveled with it quite a bit and gone through the security lines. TSA has never questioned me once looking at it. I've talked to a couple frequent flyers in our office, and when I pulled it out of my bag, they're like, "What is that?" I'm like, "Oh, it's the Cocoon. It does this, this, this." And they've all said, "Oh, we've got to get that because that'll make travel so much easier." So thank you. Shout out to Gridit and their great Cocoon product. We both love it.
I loved it so much, I actually even bought it for my mom and my brother and my dad as Christmas stocking stuffers. So
that's great. Well, this is the closing of another edition of Tech Talk, guys. I'm Bill.
And I'm Joe. We'll see you in 5 years.
5 years. That'll be good. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Tech Talk Guys with Bill and Joe. If you'd like to find out more about this podcast, please go to our website at www.techtalkguys.com.